All right, Clean Technica listeners, Clean Tech Talk here again. Scott Cooney, your host today. Today, I'm going to sit down with KJ Gimbel and Milad Davoudi. We've had them on the show before. Clean Tech Talk listeners will know who they are, but I'm going to let them introduce themselves just in case you don't. They are obviously people who have spent a long time in the EV industry and really know this stuff. They know the nuts and bolts of it. They run a warranty service for EVs, and so they have seen all the maintenance issues that come up and all the lack of maintenance issues that come up. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. It's kind of interesting to get into those details and get past all the weirdo headlines of, you know, it's we talk a little bit about how the EV conversation seems to be kind of a whack-a-mole thing. If it's not one thing, it's another. So we're going to get into that, talk a little bit about those conversations that are going on these days. And somehow, fundamentally, I think we're going to get to the point where we figure out that driving an EV is quite simply the most manly thing that somebody can do. Let's go! Welcome to another episode of Clean Tech Talk.
Welcome back for another episode of Clean Tech Talk, where we at Clean Technica interview clean tech leaders from around the world. With topics ranging from electric cars to climate change communication, you can listen to our full podcast series by visiting our website at cleantechnica.com.
Welcome to another edition of Clean Tech Talk. I'm really excited to chat with you guys today. We're going to talk a little bit about how is EV demand slowing, and we're going to dive into some information. There's been so many headlines and so much interesting kind of whack-a-mole stuff out there, and I'll explain that in a minute. But I want to first introduce our guest today. My name is Scott Cooney. I'm COO of Clean Technica and one of the founders. And I'm here today with a couple other founders, KJ Gimbel and Milad Davoudi from Accelerate Auto. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. You guys are familiar to the Clean Technica audience already, but you're going to give yourselves a quick bio and an introduction into yourselves and why people should actually listen to you, because they should.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Stoked to be here. KJ Gimbel, a CEO and founder of Accelerate. We are celebrating a decade here at Accelerate. We started in 2014. Before that, we were helping Tesla lease some of the very first Teslas ever. And that's kind of where we cut our teeth. And fast forward a decade later, and we're still cutting our teeth. So happy to be here and excited to jump in on this.
It's a lot of teeth.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Love to be here. My name is Milad Davoudi. I'm the COO of Accelerate. I started my EV journey in 2011, actually working for Tesla, starting Tesla Texas originally. Spent about 7 years there. I helped start up the used vehicle and the trade-in program, expand that kind of all over the world, and dabbled into a bunch of other legacy programs that still exist in the Tesla world. And then KJ and I joined up in 2018. And we launched XCare in 2019 for the community, which is the warranty product that is kind of our flagship now.
That's awesome. Okay, and we'll get back to that in a minute. It's a really cool company concept you guys are doing, and it's helping facilitate the EV revolution. It's answering a lot of the challenges that come up with it with regard to people adopting EVs and buying EVs, which is kind of the subject of what we're talking about today. So we'll get to that. I kind of want to start with, you know, as a media insider, I see this quandary that we're always just kind of, as I mentioned before, playing a little whack-a-mole. There's always something. There's always something in the news that seems to dominate headlines that's sort of, you know, why we shouldn't do EVs. You know, it's the supply chain. Is all this stuff made in the United States? Is this employing child labor in lithium mines? Is there enough lithium in the world? How are batteries possibly recycled? You know, and now it's like, all I'm seeing in the news the last couple of weeks is the cheap Chinese imports, and what are we going to do about these cheap Chinese imports? It just seems like there's this crazy whack-a-mole situation going on, and I don't know how to answer it. Like, I drive an EV, it's awesome. Everybody who gets in it wants to buy one. I don't see the problem. From your guys' perspective, tell me what's going on. What you see that's kind of behind all this stuff?
You know, really since the beginning, at least whenever I first started, this has never really kind of changed. There's always been a new headline, a new level of resistance. I think there's always actors kind of behind that resistance. You know, I think in the early days, we saw it a lot from more like legacy oil companies or energy companies. We saw a lot from dealers towards the beginning, which, you know, Tesla, we had to fight through a bunch of different states and lobby, kind of get those laws changed to sell direct to the manufacturer. And I think now, I think what we're seeing is still the kind of the dealers, right? In a lot of ways, you know, I think it's no surprise that if you look at days in inventory, Rivian and Tesla don't really have the same problem as everyone else. And that's because they don't have to deal with third-party sellers in this scenario. They just go straight to the end source. I think what has changed over the years, which is kind of interesting, is I think we see less of that kind of FUD from the oil companies in this, because I think a lot of them now realize that, hey, energy is in our playbook, right? It doesn't really matter about the source of it. So we see a significant amount of investments that have already been made in that industry to go more in the sustainability way, because one, it's cheaper. They could probably make more and the margins are probably greater. Kind of down the line, they can see the growth there. But, you know, I think you still see a lot of resistance on the ground floor from the dealer side. I think it's from the sellers. I think from a consumer basis, you know, you're getting your information from the sellers on the ground floor. I mean, every single person I speak to, they might repeat some of the headlines, which are new problems, I guess, that I would say most of them are warrantable in a scenario, but they're not long lasting problems, right? There are very clear solutions that are either have already been kind of already been passed, paved the way forward on how to actually solve those problems. And it really requires an individual to stay up to date. And that's where most people, I would say a population of people, are not very well educated to, because they have no incentive to stay up to date, right? I've had many conversations more recently where it's, let's just use the example of battery recyclability, right? And it's, well, what's going to happen with all these batteries? You're going to end up in a huge lot somewhere and it's just wasting away. One quick conversation about Redwood Materials and how they're actually going about recycling and really breaking down these batteries to the core metals and putting them back in a supply chain totally solves that. But the solution is more complicated to understand than the problem. And this is where the media world, the clickbait world, they want to gravitate towards that. I think in their world, you know, and what we've seen, unfortunately, since what, last 10 years now or so, or probably even longer, division drives traffic, right? If we can divide more, we can get more people, but to kind of read our stuff. But honestly, I think when you're talking about a normal consumer, I think everyone, even today, has the same questions that they did in 2011, 2012. It's not much different, right? The same questions, the same concerns. How do I get from point A to point B? How do I charge my car every day? Right? Range? How do I take a road trip? How much stuff can I fit in here? Right? Basic levels of questions that aren't different between early adopters or non-early adopters. I think we're clearly seeing that. So I think the media and a lot of the powers at be, without going into some conspiracy of where all the money's coming from, to power a lot of those headlines, it's the change, right? You know, Mark Twain once said, "I like progress; it's change I don't like." And I think that resonates with a lot of people out there that are just trying to get by, right? You know, your core focus in life for, I think, the average American is, how do I feed my kids and how do I feed my family? I'm not worried about what's actually happening, what's being pushed down, what is being incentivized, where is this going? Is an electric vehicle going to change my life? I mean, I need to feed my kids first, right? Like, that's my core focus.
There's a scenario of if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. And so people are, yeah, okay, they're feeling a lot of pain at the pump and paying way too much for gas, but it's like not like broken, you know, right. It hurts, but it's not, they're if their car is broken down on the side of the road, that's a good analogy. Like they're okay, it's broken, so now they got to fix it. But if it's not broken, they can still feed their kids. They can still drop them off at school. You know, the other priorities tend to be, you know, more prevalent. So it's interesting to hear you say that, kind of the arguments like are still kind of going on. And it's, I agree with you. Like I've been hearing a lot of the same stuff for so many years that it's all those things you mentioned. Maybe the answer is like getting these quick answers, retorts to these things. That was a 10 year ago problem. We can recycle those materials now. You know, it's a technological problem. People are working on it. There's companies fixing it. FreeWire Technology too. They started as like a battery recycling company, and they just took all these old batteries and just repurposed them. And even the components that were down to 50% or whatever, they found uses for them and extended their life by another 10, 15 years. just cool innovations that are kind of going on. And then obviously these are metals. Like everybody knows you can throw an aluminum can in the recycle bin. It can get recycled. Like how that stuff actually works on a technical perspective is probably a lot more challenging. However, at the end of the day, it's a metal and it gets recycled, and everybody can understand steel and aluminum get recycled, whereas plastic doesn't, right? So it's like, how do we start telling that story a little bit better and kind of breaking that stuff down?
It starts and ends with education in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, for me, it's like just speaking more philosophically, you know, one thing about American innovation is that we always try to push needle forward, right? We don't do things because they're easy, but we do them because we're hard. We try to progress the future forward, right? That's what we do. We've done that throughout our entire history. In fact, like in my mind, the patriotism aspect is American ingenuity and innovation, which historically has been from the automotive side, right? I mean, that is like core to our roots in Motor City. And we were the center of the world when it came to setting the status quo of what vehicles are built. And we're there again, finally, after 3-4 decades of not being there, we're finally there. Right. But no one's saying that message anymore, because now it's more divisive, or somehow it's more American not to be more American in this.
Yeah, it's the fact that it's politicized is really the problem. I mean, it used to be innovation was just innovation. And if new technology came out, everybody was excited about it. Now it's, you know, it's almost suppressed to a certain extent. So much of what we know about, you know, futurism is based off of the 60s. You know, when we were going to the moon, it was reach for the stars. It unified us as a country and gave us the ability to do things that we never thought were possible. Now we're doing things every day that nobody thought were possible. But instead of having that unified front, we have the antithesis of that, which is simply people just trolling all day, trying to find a way to make somebody else feel bad about what they're buying, which is crazy. It's nuts to see that. I mean, we have people that we work with that have gone from ICE to EV. We have people that never look back. We have people that for some reason it doesn't fit their day-to-day use. There's people that need to have diesel trucks that take them to work and use them in the workforce. And nobody's saying that they're taking those trucks away. It's not like it's a gun debate here. We're selling cars. We're creating opportunities, environments for manufacturers to create better products. And if it works for your application, then great. But if it doesn't, don't harp on it. There's no reason to do that. Over the years have changed so many minds when it comes to how EVs are even seen. And I think there at some point it needs to be, we need to revert back to how we used to think about things. And that's, if futurism is going to be a part of our DNA, then we look at it, you know, without political intent, whether it's built by union workers or not by union workers, it needs to be just that, a product. You don't see people out there boycotting Apple, you know, because they're building phones that are using TikTok, right? I mean, it's just not politicized. There's people that say because it's built in other countries, they'd rather have them built here. Yep. But that's just a general understandable approach to a company that pays their taxes in the United States. But you know, ultimately, So much of what we look at is politicized, and it shouldn't be. It should be just looked at as stuff that we do.
Definitely. And I mean, in my own personal experience, I've stopped talking about the climate impacts of my Tesla because, you know, there's an audience for that. Sure. Right. But the general public, it's as soon as you go there, it's all of a sudden it's a political conversation. Right. So I have just completely gone into a whole different mode of like, wow, the maintenance. I've had my car for 4.5 years now. And I've paid $60 in maintenance. That's it. I haven't even changed the tires yet. I live in a place I don't drive that much. I have 17,000 miles on my car. So I don't drive, I'm not a daily commuter kind of person, but I haven't even changed the tires yet. I haven't even rotated them yet. Probably should, but regardless, I've paid $60 in maintenance over 4.5 years. And I charge my car off solar panels on my roof. I don't even pay for that. Like that's all free. Like I have paid nothing for this car for 4.5 years. And that's what I start to talk to people about. And ironically, I had a friend who was just trying to decide between a Subaru and a Tesla Y. And, you know, she asked me, hey, do you like yours? And I was like, yeah, I've had it 4.5 years. Here's the thing, da da da. Didn't talk about climate stuff at all. And what sold her ultimately was dog mode. She has a dog, and she's like, that ultimately, I was like, this is a genius idea. And I you know, I have a dog, and of course I, you know, I love the dog, and it's always a pain in the butt when I'm trying to figure out what to do with the dog when I go somewhere and I can't take the dog inside. So, you know, it's just like, we got to, the whack-a-mole thing, we just got to keep hitting the clear wins and just be like, there's nothing political about dog mode yet. I don't know yet. Somebody will politicize it at some point, I'm sure.
Same thing with my wife. We went to the Model X launch, and the one thing that sold her was the safety. It wasn't the range. It wasn't the utility factor. It was the safety. It was the safest car built. Yep. And that, to her, as being a risk mitigator, she's an emergency preparedness. So safety is everything for her. And, you know, for our family, it makes it, you know, that's our number one. And, you know, that it had nothing to do with saving the environment.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So we, you know, we're I think one by one, this is how these transitions happen, right? Like you get a lot of people who just naturally join. Now you get the first adopters who are really into the concept, and then everybody else kind of starts to join for other reasons and whatever. And then at some point you just hit a tipping point and everybody forgets that we were having this argument for so long. This is just clearly a better thing.
Hello, clean tech enthusiasts. If you enjoy Clean Tech Talk and Clean Technica, please consider pitching in a few dollars a month at cleantechnica.com/support. That's cleantechnica.com/support, where you can sign up in seconds with a credit card, pitch in a few dollars a month, or whatever you like. Some people actually contribute $100 a month to help us cover climate change and clean tech and try to help the world one word at a time. Thank you.
So I mean, let's talk a little bit about demand, right? So I, you know, it's crazy to see these headlines that demand is slowing and this, that, the other, and there's all these concerns. And then you actually look at the numbers and demand is not slowing. It's, you know, there's overall slowing of demand for cars, but EVs have continued to rise, whereas gas cars have dropped off. And it's like, you just, how do you not point at a chart that says we saw the number one and number three best-selling cars in the world were EVs last year? And say that this is somehow demand is it's so bonkers how people can spin these arguments. So you guys have lived in this industry. Yeah. Here's the floor.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, yeah, I mean, to kind of really point out what Elon and both RJ have been saying, right? It's like, at some point you can't have 50% growth year over year every single year for an indefinite period of time. You're reaching closer to the top. Things are they're going to come down a little bit, but you're still growing, right? There's still incremental growth happening. In fact, no one is saying that there's a decline in EV adoption. That's because you can't say that. That would be factually incorrect, right? So it's a slow of your total growth, because at some point, you know, the accelerating factor, that special factor has to kind of decrease a little bit because you're going to less and less people. Now, there's also more used vehicles on the road, right? Especially EVs. So in a lot, I would, you know, one thing I did at Tesla was start the used car program. Most people buy used cars in this country, right? Mm-hmm. Not new. So now there is a larger option of folks out there that are trying to buy these used vehicles, and they are. So there's that aspect. But, you know, it's hard to ignore the, you know, we went from getting a rate of 2% to now 8-9%. That changes the monthly payment process for somebody, because that's what a normal American is looking at, right? Yes. They're not looking at, oh, I can buy this $30,000-$40,000 car cash, right? It's how much can I afford on a monthly basis? And when that becomes out of reach, it doesn't really matter about the cost of the car. It all comes down to what that monthly payment is. And it's not just Tesla, really. It's not about EVs. It's every single vehicle out there, right? I mean, we're seeing, actually Joe educated on me this on the last podcast. It was like I think the average new car sale is like $40,000-something at this point.
Yeah.
Something like that. So a Model 3 is cheaper than the average new vehicle you can actually buy. Yeah. But still, it doesn't matter what the cost is. It's the monthly payment, the percentage factor has a huge impact for your normal day American. So, and I think that's where we're getting towards is, hey, we got 10% new vehicle registrations being EVs. Now we're going to just normal day folk, right? Where you don't have $3,000, $5,000 worth of savings to just drop on a depreciating asset like a vehicle, right? You really need to be way more monthly payment focused. And this is what how normal people think, right? And like, I think, you know, we're all normal people, right? I think we can all understand that your main priority is how can I make sure that I can just pay for this month every month and still be able to put food on the table, because that's what matters most.
And a lot of people are, I mean, obviously more people are more educated now than they've ever been, and the use and especially in calculating payments and understanding the mathematics of financing a car and what that looks like. And, you know, all of the old adages, you know, buy things that appreciate, lease things that depreciate, you know, when you're in a rate time and period that we are in now, in comparison to where we were in say like 2009, 2010, you know, it was the same rates back then. We, you know, 08 hit and everybody's 6-7% was normal. But the difference then was that people were making a transition away from gas guzzlers, because gas was also at $5 a gallon across the nation. So people had to get creative and get rid of their gas guzzlers to go into more economic cars. Now what we have is people that are, you know, looking at, okay, well, can I kick the can down the road with my current vehicle? Am I going to get my head ripped off on my trade-in value? Is it, you know, those are the things that the negative equity, you know, bubble that's there right now is significant. I mean, it's not just some of these cars that, you know, people went in on these long extended term loans on. It's people that went in on a normal term that their car just ended up getting crushed in value. The inflation in values, you know, was so dramatic that it left all these people with catastrophic, you know, negative equity. Well, that does one of two things. That either kicks the can down the road and you lease a car, roll the negative equity in to the lease and try to cauterize the wound, or you just decide to drive that car until the wheels fall off, because you're never going to be right side up in it. And both of those don't create a perfect environment for you know, new vehicle sales. So yeah. It's natural that this is going to happen, but it's just the spotlight's on it more because it's a hot topic like EV.
True. And then you layer on top, you know, the stuff Milad was talking about with regard to the dealers. It's interesting coming back to that and having the same friend went to dealers and they were trying to talk her out of buying an EV. Even the dealerships that had EVs for sale were kind of pushing towards the gas cars. And it was like, you know, getting misinformation from the person who's selling you a car, and you want to believe the person who's selling you something, right? And if you don't believe them, they don't believe themselves. And obviously you're not going to buy a product. And so having a salesperson who is actively anti-EV is hurtful, of course, to, you know, the overall adoption of things. So I think that's one other big puzzle that needs to be solved. And obviously the disruptive technology and the disruptive business model of direct to consumer has destroyed that, because the, you know, two of the three top selling cars in the world were direct to consumer model. And so dealers either need to get with that program or figure out a way around it or something. Well, but
dealers are going to be dealers. I mean, they're going to go after the sale that has the most commission, the most amount of margin, the most amount of incentive from the manufacturer. You know, it all goes towards the scenario. And if the person comes in with, you know, with no trade, paying cash, then they're fine selling them an EV. But if they have a couple $1,000s worth of negative equity and they don't want to put anything down, they're going to steer them towards something that has a discount that they can roll in that negative equity with. And they're just dealer salespeople are just bred to do that. They're bred to be, you know, opportunists or to find the circle that meets the circle.
Yeah,
they know where their bread is buttered. Not a lot of people have good experiences at dealers whenever you're shopping for an EV. I remember my first EV shopping experience was in 2013. I was trying to get a Nissan Leaf, and I was in Houston. And the Houston dealer straight up refused to give me one. Just said no. And I was like, but you have them. Yeah, we don't care. We don't, you know, you can get this 2012, but we're not going to give you this 2013. And I'm like, I'm trying to buy this, right? I don't understand what's going on. I had to go to a dealer in Austin. They had to ship the car to me, one that was willing to just give me a car that they had in inventory. I've been to a Ford dealer nearby to test drive the F-150 Lightning. I've been to a few different Mercedes dealers. And what this consistent theme, this is more recent too, not back then, kind of talking about now, the consistent theme is you go in, you get passed away from the star salesperson, right? Like the person who probably would be able to give you a good experience, they're not dealing with you. You're getting the bottom of the barrel because they don't even care, right? So you're getting somebody that has absolutely no level of understanding about what you're driving, what they're talking about. In fact, there was just countless times where I asked a question. Obviously, I already knew the answers to all these questions because I'm in the industry, but I just wanted to see what their answers were. Their answers were just totally made up. And it was just, you know, if I was a normal person just listening to you and taking that in reality, I can understand why when I end up at a supercharger, all of a sudden a Kira Niro, a Niro EV pulls in confused about what to do, right? Because they're not setting these people up for success. And you know, you jump into one of these cars, and if you have a bad experience from the start, are you going to consider that again?
Totally.
Right?
Or be an evangelist for it.
Right. Right. You're going to talk about all these problems because the person that should have given you all the information and educated you on how to actually own and use it didn't do that. And for a lot of reasons, because they just simply didn't care to help you because they had no incentive to do so. And to be frank, they probably think that their jobs are at risk and they didn't want to, right? Because they're led to believe the more of these, the less of us for some reason, which makes no sense.
Yeah, it's fear factor, right? And people have like an inbound, you know, like this self-protection kind of mechanism, and they're ready for these messages that confirm what they already believe. And so that we see that. And of course, like KJ was talking about the politicization of things, like people are ready to believe what they want to believe, and it helps push them towards a margin. And that's a challenge, obviously. So there's a ton of, you know,
That's regurgitated, right? I mean, you see one meme that has something that's anti-EV on it. You love to roast your buddy who's got an EV.
Oh Lord. Let's put a pin in that. I want to come back to that because you're hitting a soft spot for me, and that's a trigger point. I don't want to lose my mind right now, so let's stick on topic. But sure. I do want to come back to that. Okay, so there's all these concerns around. Now I can't stop thinking about the stupid memes I keep getting. All right, so there's all these concerns that people have around EVs, as Malad was talking about, like, and they haven't really changed all that much over the years. Now your company X, you know, has this product XCare warranty service for EVs that helps solve a lot of these problems. I would love to hear your experience with this, with regard to like people who are, you know, just uncertain about getting an EV or how they're going to own and operate an EV, and kind of the solution that you guys came up with to help provide this kind of peace of mind on some level. Yeah. And then, you know, dive in as much as you want. I'd love to hear some, like, a case study on kind of how it's worked out for people.
For sure. Yeah. So, I mean, to start, you know, the reason why we started XCare is because what we were seeing, now this was 5 years ago, right? So where most of the EVs that were in the market were pretty much all Teslas and some Nissan Leafs out there. And they were coming up to say that 4 year, 5 year age group. And there was just a lot, you saw a huge drop in value because a lot of people were uncomfortable about buying this, you know, new technology for them, but it's used in reality, right? And they don't know what they don't know. And that's where people like us came in and say, hey, you've got to give that peace of mind, that confidence, essentially. That confidence in saying that, hey, you know, you could purchase this, and with this is how you get yourself in. And that even if something were to go wrong, even if that fear was justified in any sort of way, you're okay. And it's not something that you have to, it's that first experience, right? As we just mentioned, that first experience of, hey, are you going to buy another one? Yes or no? We're trying to make sure that answer is always yes. And that's kind of the reason why XCare was started in the first place. And every single day, we have a lot of our customers don't call us because they already own a car. They're looking to buy one, right? And they're looking to buy a used electric vehicle. One, they want to talk to a bunch of former Tesla people and people who've been in this industry for so long that, you know, we know the kind of the specific sweet spots of everything and all know the different options that have changed over the years. And so we're kind of experts in that scenario. But also, they want to understand, well, I can't, I wasn't going to buy a used vehicle. We hear this every day. I wasn't going to buy one of these used cars without this, right? And that just helps kind of power the mission of why we created it in the first place, because that was really the demographic that we were seeking, is we can get people to actually consider buying a used electric vehicle when yeah. X-Care is an option in their peripheral.
And themselves. It was also, I mean, at the time we had a lot of lease returns coming in, right? And these were $50,000 lease returns that were coming out of warranty. And, you know, we were nervous because we knew that, you know, not a whole lot of people want to buy a $50,000 car that doesn't have a warranty. And at the time, Tesla didn't have coverage. There was really nothing out there unless you got a Tesla CPO car from their used team. There's no way that you could buy anything from a dealer or from a private seller that had coverage. So we knew that wasn't going to work. I mean, that there had to be a way to you know, create something, because we knew that even though these cars don't have the historical, you know, maintenance issues like ICE cars do, we knew that nobody's going to buy a $50,000 3-year-old, 4-year-old car without a warranty. It's just
especially new technology, right?
Yes. It's in new technology, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I think a lot of, here's like an interesting situation that we see. Honestly, I want to sit here and say that this is kind of a one-off, but it's not. We see it quite frequently. Now, granted, we also have a visibility on all the things that, that occur, right? Yeah. So, you know, exactly. I guarantee you there's more that we don't see nothing happens, right? Everything is all great and rainbows and everything like that. But right, you know, it's the difference of what we do. But, you know, if you're stretching to, and I have a lot of friends that are in this scenario. I mean, a significant amount of friends that are in this scenario. If you're stretching to buy a $24,000 Model 3 and all of a sudden you go and let's just say you live in Houston, right? It's 100 degrees outside and you turn your AC on and it's blowing hot air. What we're seeing is that's roughly a $1,500, $2,000 expense. Now, is that happening left and right all the time? Are these vehicles prone to it? No, of course not, right? But when something happens, it's that situation of the frequency of issues is significantly lower than that of your conventional gas car. I mean, significantly. But when something happens, the cost of repairs is a little bit higher, right? But the frequency is a lot lower. So like the average repairs we see is $1,200. Now we see things that are like $10,000 plus. Sometimes, you know, like half shaft issues with Model X, you know, if you're replacing both of them, that could be upwards to $4,000, right? How many people, if you know, that are trying to buy a $30,000 car can afford a $4,000 repair, right? That's not something that individuals can really budget for. And it's not something they should be budgeting for, right? And once again, that's going to change that experience for that EV driver because they have this. And that really gives that opportunity. And we are super confident, and we have been now for years. And it's not like we're just starting this now, but we have, you know, originally it was, we're confident to be able to take that gamble on behalf of everybody else. We can take this risk because we know this, we know the ins and outs of this entire technology. We understand how this all works. We understand how Tesla service works. We get how Rivian is also going to work, at least at that time. Now we know how that works, and Lucid as well, but also clearly, obviously, the conventional service centers as well. But a lot of people are in, Scott, like in your situation, I have never had to do anything to my car. You know, yeah. my mother has a 2015 Model S with 89,000 miles on it. I just drive it around this past weekend. It's wonderful, right? There's absolutely no issues with the car, but she has X-Care on it because just in case something were to happen.
Yeah. And, you know. and thanks to people like her, you guys even exist, because like if there were many, many problems, your insurance would be so expensive.
Right. Exactly. It would be unaffordable.
You need a lot of people like me to even have an industry like you that exists. Right. So we, you know, it's no claims equals profit for the insurance company.
and to touch on one, you know, this is just top of mind because it happened a couple of days ago. There was a, you know, somebody on, I think the subject line was X-Care saved my ass, and yes. In the TMC forums. And it was literally somebody that was freaking out about, you know, about something happening to their car. And it was roughly the cost of the repairs was roughly the entire cost of the person's coverage. And so that, I mean, that's essentially, you know, what you want. It's obviously as an insurer, you don't want everything to be like that, but you want, right. but you want it to be black and white enough to where people will look at it and be like, okay, I understand the total exposure here, and I understand the how I can mitigate the exposure by purchasing a product like this and make a rational choice. And it's not, and once again, just like, you know, just like ICE cars versus EVs, it's not for everybody's application. But for the people that understand the math and it goes with their driving habits, you know, determining that is fairly easy now. I mean, you can literally go on our site now and purchase Xcare in under a minute. So that's, I mean, we made it completely e-commerce platform as easy as it could possibly get for anybody to understand what we cover. We have the contract literally right there. We have taken all of the legacy crap out of the warranty side of things to make it the most transparent thing possible for the community in the style that we think Tesla would have done it in.
I was just going to say, did you guys just steal that model from me?
Middle-aged, direct-to-consumer.
You're just like, screw the dealer, screw that insurance salesperson. We're just going to go.
We were first on that because, you know, we built it for ourselves, right? What do we want to see, right? Yeah. What do our family members want to see? You know, what do our friends want to, like, I don't want them to have to go through all these hoops and chains where every single person, every time it's not the time they call somebody, it's a different price or it's a different coverage. Or they're saying, no, well, I will only show you the contract once you purchase it. I mean, we literally went through just rounds of conversations with all these other legacy people, and that's what was happening, right? And so we essentially took every negative point and we say, all right, well, we'll just put the pricing available for everyone to see. So it doesn't matter who you talk to. We're going to focus more on education. We're not going to focus on just selling you. If you wanted to sit here and say, hey, I'll buy this in about a year. Like, great. We'll talk to you then. We'll talk to you then. No big deal. That's fine.
It's not like, oh, we're going to give you another $100 off. You know, right, I told my manager. You know,
right.
That was watching Milad talk to a lot of these underwriters about, in some of these initial meetings that we had, just literally going component by component. What are the usual suspects? All of these things that we had to do that really were critical to us getting this through, because there's been competitors that have surfaced that tried and failed miserably because they didn't know what to expect. They didn't know that all they thought were, we're going to throw a dart at the dartboard and collect this money and we'll raise rates if we have to. Well, if all of a sudden their loss ratio goes through the roof, they don't have time to do that. They're done.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really takes spending a better part of 2 years, which we did, to even make this thing happen. And so now it's, you know, now we're at the point to where we knew where we were going to be 5 years ago, that Model 3 and Model Y will have less expensive fixes, less, frequency of issues. And that's kind of evening out and the cost for everything. So we couldn't have gotten there without the S and the X owners, and then the 3 and the Y owners are helping our platform kind of stabilize. And then when you have things like Cybertruck, where, you know, you're talking about just alien technology, then, you know, we also have to figure that out.
I know. Yeah. I have a lot of friends who think my Model 3 is a spaceship, and I'm like, just wait.
Right.
Okay. Well, good. Good. So a couple things. I want to touch on the fact that both of you guys own Cybertrucks. We don't have time for it now, but I really want to get to, you know, maybe let's have another conversation where we just talk Cybertruck all day, every day, because Milad, I see the screen background you have there and the pictures you showed of the emblem and the way you did the wrap and all that kind of stuff. It's cool stuff. So you want to talk about changing the game, turning this into a spaceship. It's cool. But the Cybertruck gets to this thing that KJ just touched on, which is this like manliness, right?
Yeah.
And my God, like let me digress, if you will, if you guys don't mind, I'm gonna digress.
Go.
It's my grandpa just like speaking right through me. So I've been on an environmental journey for a long time. You know, it's kind of what drew me into, you know, being in Clean Technica, and I do it pretty much everything I do, right? I have a little permaculture garden. I have, you know, the house powered by solar, and I charge my EV. As I mentioned, I haven't paid a dime for charging for, you know, almost 4.5 years now because I get excess solar off my roof. And, you know, I drive the Tesla and, you know, all this stuff. And until I got the Tesla kind of changed things a little bit. It's still there. Until that time, being a hummus eating vegetarian who grew his own kale and made it into stupid kale salads and brought it to parties. And then was, you know, always like talking about LED bulbs and stuff like that. My Lord, like the amount of like how to answer for my own manliness that I've had to do over the years has been over friggin' whelming. And I'm a normal dude. Like I, you know, I go to the gym. I, you know, occasionally, not very often, but go to the gym. You know, I go running. I surf. I do things that guys do. I'm a pretty normal dude. And you know, like I still deal with this stuff all the time. And the memes, KJ, you nailed it. Like you guys probably get them too. Just within the last month, I've probably gotten 3 memes from anti-EV friends who've sent me stuff that is just like, one's like a, you know, a guy dressed up like a Barbie doll sitting in like a toy car. And the headline is like, this is what I think about when a man in my life says he just bought an EV. And another one was this woman, you know, crying, and I shouldn't give anybody any ideas because the people are just going to keep creating these things. But there's a woman like crying and she's sitting there and she's like, oh, my boyfriend dumped me because I wasn't concerned enough about the environment. So he left as soon as he put his man bun up, grabbed his man purse and went outside and charged his car for an hour. And then he left. Like, I'm just like, dear Lord, like the amount of, yeah, the energy that these idiots put into creating these things, sitting in their mom's basement for 4 hours a day, like trolling and trying to like somehow be manlier than me. And I don't care. I'm out surfing. I don't even know who this dude is. He's like pasty white and pale, and he's sitting in his mom's basement. He has nothing to do. What do we do? How do we, you know, so you guys have the Cybertruck. Yeah. It's pretty fucking manly, right? Let's
pretty,
go there.
Pretty manly.
And,
yeah.
And so like, let's talk about it as men. Let's talk about this a little bit. Here's the floor.
The Cybertruck is like my, I don't know. I've had Model S, I've had Model X, I've had Model 3, Model Y, now Cybertruck. In the early days, you know, all my buddies drive lifted trucks. We're in Texas. It's a thing. They're all diesel lifted trucks. The bigger the lift, the bigger the wheels and tires, the lower the gas mileage, the better. And you know, put an EGR delete on and now you're getting even better gas mileage.
Lord.
Yeah. But so that's like the normal, right? And so when I first started bringing Teslas around them, it was, you know, well, are they fast? And you take them in the cars and you know, break their necks and show them that, yeah, these cars are stupid fast.
Yeah, they just got a chiropractic adjustment, you know, from the seat. Yeah.
But then it always goes to like something like, oh, it doesn't have enough range. I can't make it down to Austin and back in one drive. I'm like, who does that? Who wants to do that? It sounds awful.
Yeah.
You know, all these things. And then it was, you know, then one of them, you know, actually made the choice and got a Model 3. Went from a Dodge Mega Cab to a Model 3 Performance. And he's been catching crap ever since. And he loves the car. He's got a Cybertruck on order. He's waiting for it. And he doesn't want to give up his Model 3. Since then, his wife has gotten a Model S, and they're 100% EV. And so he sees kind of the earlier pain that I saw, but really it's as long as people have the sentiment that EVs are not tough, or the people that drive EVs are soft, it's only because they've never either been in one, or they really have been, it's been ingrained in their blood to act a certain way. I grew up in a Mustang family. I had plenty of cars that had you know, souped up power. My first real car had a 351 with a Pro Charger on it. So it's not like I've never had this before. But going to EV, there's applications for it, and my application makes sense because I want the best technology. I want the fastest car. I want to have the safest car, and I want to have what is the newest and greatest? And I think that, you know, when you start talking about, you know, the people that are putting out these memes, it's only because they are in, what's ingrained in them is that they have to have this classic car mentality, but none of them own classic cars. It's like we are going to ride these, we're going to ride this till we're dead, blue in the face, and only because we, you know, feel one way about it, and we're going to find every single argument we can to lobby against it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm a performance guy. I got into EVs for performance, literally performance alone. It wasn't actually anything else. And that was like kind of bizarre when I realized that other people started feeling this way of like somehow gas has some attachment to manlyhood. And now diesels used to not be that way. And now for some reason they are that way. And that's also honestly confusing as hell for me. And then you have a bunch of like, you know, people that build up cars, they run ethanol. I mean, what's ethanol, right? How is that manly, right? That doesn't make any sense. But like for me, I race Corvettes. I'm on the track, right? I mean, I have a lot of track days. And, you know, why are more tracks putting up superchargers, right? Why are more people bringing EVs to tracks? Is it because they're not manly enough or something, right? It's all about numbers and performance. I will say, since having the Cybertruck and being in Austin, I get met with a ton of people all the time. I mean, I'm literally talking every time I drive. It's like I'm a product specialist at Tesla.
Yeah.
Like it's just, I'm just having tons of conversations. There's like crowds of people that come in. And one, I always make sure to be honest. I think honesty breaks down the barrier of whatever that was, whatever they may have had up. But one thing the common theme is what I'm hearing is people are openly admitting, and I was very anti-EV. Like none of this made any sense. I was actually anti this car. I thought this Cybertruck was stupid. I thought it looked dumb in pictures. And then was one of the things is I thought it was never going to come out. But now seeing it in front of my own eyes, holy, this is awesome, right? And like that is literally the reaction that I'm hearing over and over again. Sometimes I get met with some, you know, some country dude that's coming out of his big diesel truck and like hardcore accent and everything like that. I was like, oh man, I'm about to get maybe like, let's see what type of conversation this is. And he's just, and they're just like loving this thing because it's so out of this world. And I think that's what Cybertruck is doing that, right? It's kind of creating excitement where there wasn't excitement or where there was that negativity. Honestly, it's hard to see this thing and be like, oh yeah, that's not special.
It's kind of soft.
Yeah, it's kind of soft, right? And it's like, you know.
Said no
like,
one ever.
About no one ever.
It doesn't make any sense. Like the other day, like someone tried to coal roll me on the road and I just floored it and it didn't even like touch me. It was all the way back there. And the dude was just like, I don't know what just happened. And it's like, yeah, because your car's not fast. Like this is what happens. As Carol Shelby once said, horsepower sells cars, torque wins races. I mean, you know,
and trust me, there's been a lot of talkers and meme senders that I'm looking for out on the streets now in my Cybertruck. I've got some boys in Raptors that are about to get met with a fury.
I've even just in this conversation come up with a couple of anti-gas memes that I'm going to throw out at them.
I think I'm going to like, there's that one where it's like you put the logos and the cross them out on the car. I think that's what I'm going to do. And I think the Raptors first.
All right. Let's have a meme competition.
Exactly.
let's come up with a few. We'll let Clean Technica readers vote on them. And then we're going to, Clean Technical will promote the bejesus out of
it. Let's do that.
Gentlemen, this has been a real pleasure. I can't wait for the full Cybertruck conversation. Will you guys please come back on the program? And
absolutely.
100%.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm very much looking forward to that. Well, Milad, KJ, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a great episode of Clean Tech Talk. Really appreciate you guys. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Scott.
That's good. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you for listening to Clean Tech Talk. Join us next time to get your electric fix. If you would like to sponsor our podcast, send us an email at accounts@cleantechnica.com. That's accounts at cleantechnica.com. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.